These models can do art, they can do math, science, coding, prediction, time series. So they're doing a lot of stuff that we thought was uniquely human-like, especially creative stuff, just generative AI.
Welcome to Tech Talks, hosted by myself, David Savage, and powered by Nash Squared. On today's show, my guest is Peter Morgan. He's the founder and CEO of the Deep Learning Partnership, an organization providing AI consulting and solutions. Not many of them around, are there, Akish?
Hardly. flooded with them. I think that's the place to be at the moment, isn't it?
It is. And whilst I jest, I mean, Peter's got a really interesting backstory. He actually started off as a physicist who analyzed big data from particle physics. So kind of experiments, cosmology and so on. So it's a slightly different story into the Deep Learning Partnership. And I think it makes it a really compelling and interesting interview. So whilst I jest that obviously we're talking a lot about this kind of stuff right now, I do think that this is a super interesting chat that focuses a lot around that education piece, lack of education, lack of skills, lack of awareness amongst leaders and employees, and what we need to try and do to address that. I think it's fair to say there is still a fair amount of haziness around how a lot of this technology can really help us on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, I think so. But I think the more and more we keep saying that, I think people are actually very educated and there is a good, genuine baseline of understanding. But I feel like the technology is so much more use, I think. You know, when people say, oh, you know, we don't really know about it and that sort of thing, I think it's where or how it can help people in their, I guess, personal lives, careers, work lives, businesses, these sorts of things. But it's more, you know, how are we able to use it effectively, efficiently, and how are businesses able to kind of leverage it, right? Because for consumers like you and I, things like that could be, you know, fantastic. So
is that like that device that gets us away, Humane's AI pin that gets us away from the screens that you then rejected on Monday's show?
Well, no. I'm not saying rejected. I'm saying I'm going to be slow to join the queue. Okay. I'm one of those guys. You know, you see a queue outside a restaurant or a bar or something. You kind of like
too cool for school. That's what it is.
Well, you know, I'm kind of just, you know, scoping out what people are, you know, doing, what they're talking about. But yeah, man, look, I mean, this is it, right? This is our next thing. I mean, we've done this for how many years, and you know, we were talking about cloud and data and all these sorts of things not too long ago, and now we're talking about AI, generative AI, you know, everything like that. So yeah, this is it, mate.
Well, Peter clearly has a lot more experience and a longer back history to explain than either of us talking about.
And a lot more school grades. Yeah.
We'll hand over to Peter and we'll be back with some comments on something entirely different, on some headphones actually, afterwards. Ooh. So Peter, thank you for joining me today. You're the founder and CEO of the Deep Learning Partnership. Before we get into anything else, why don't we start there and ask who Deep Learning Partnership are?
Sure, yeah. Thanks for having me, David. So I started Deep Learning Partnership 8 years ago in 2016 to be, as the name suggests, you know, deep learning consulting company. And previous to that, for the previous 3 years, I was a data science consulting agency. And then I went all in on deep learning or AI. Yeah. So, you know, deep learning has become, you know, 99% of AI. So I kind of made an early bet, right? I went all in 2016, so haven't looked back.
In 2016 is obviously, AI has been around for a very long time, deep learning in particular. However, all the same, it's a little bit ahead of the current explosion of interest. What was it that caused you to go, yeah, this is the space that I'm going to focus in on?
Yeah, great question. So as I said, you know, early 2013, data science, I wanted to become a data scientist. And so big data was the thing, right? Spark, Hadoop, all of that good stuff. And data science was the application of analytic tools to analyzing data, big data. And I quickly saw that machine learning was giving the most powerful results, right? So I dug deep into machine learning. And then quickly I realized that neural networks, a subset, our subset of machine learning was actually going to be the most powerful machine learning approach. So yeah, that's kind of my journey, but it started off with data science back in 2013.
And obviously that's 2013 to now. Mm-hmm. What's been your career prior to that? What's your background and kind of how did you get into the industry as a whole?
Yeah, sure. So I was doing a PhD in physics. So, you know, I'm a scientist by kind of background and hence data science, right? I just thought, okay, I'll stick the word data in front and, you know, that will make me legit in the commercial world. And so really it's no different than what I was doing in physics, you know, analyzing a bunch of big data from CERN, big particle physics accelerators, or the cosmos, you know, big telescopes. And so I thought I would apply that to business and help their business to become more efficient by analyzing their data set, big data sets. That's really, you know, the foundation of everything. And today, the main tool is just, you know, neural networks. So it's still the same principle. We're just trying to help businesses become more efficient and effective.
So you're helping businesses become more efficient and effective. I think at the minute, how we apply AI, it's funny, isn't it? I've said this on a number of different podcasts. People who listen to this regularly are going to begin to hear me say similar things each time. But I've heard it said that we kind of have been told what the art of the possible is. We've been told what AI can do before we've actually seen it in practice, and people are trying to work out how to actually implement it in a way that they do get those benefits from it. So in terms of efficiencies, how do we get there?
Yeah, okay. So basically, it, you know, everything's enabled by data. If you really think about it and drill everything down, whether that's a bank transaction or basically predicting people's patterns or humans' behavior, right, to try to deliver a better product or service before your competition does, really, or outcompete your competition. So this is all data-driven. So the world's become very data-driven, and that's a good thing. You know, you know, with the sort of advent of digitalization, really, we just have all this data that we couldn't, you know, collect before and measure. And so, yeah, it's right that everything should become data-driven. We're still people, you know, we're subjective beings. So, you know, we like the human touch, but really we can deliver that human touch better if we can have the right data to make the right decisions as well, right? It's a tool. So really, with neural networks, they're just the best tools for finding patterns in data. So they really are, right? So it's not a want-to-be thing, it's a real thing. And so it's just a matter, like you said, of rolling it out now. It's a general purpose technology, AI, deep learning, and we're just in the process, very early stages of rolling or implementing this new technology into companies of all descriptions and all domains, because it is general purpose, whether retail or autonomous vehicles or, you know, drug discovery. These are general purpose tools. So, yeah, we're in the very early stages.
And what do you think the big challenges are to rolling this tech out? And aside from regulation, because I know that regulation is something that everyone is kind of waiting on. They don't want to retrofit. Yeah. So there's a little bit of a nervousness to see kind of what the EU comes down the pipeline with legislation, regulation. But what do you think the big barriers are?
I think, it has to come down to education, right? So any new technology, you know, people won't have, you know, like I say, I started back 2013, but a lot of people, this is just coming onto their radar in the last year or two, especially with the release of ChatGPT, right? Everybody's, what the heck is this? Trying it out on a personal level first, and then seeing how amazing it is, right? I mean, it blew my mind completely, and I've been, you know, preparing for 10 years. It's like, oh my God, we're finally here, right? It can do language, right? Language is almost a solved problem. So you think about how much of business involves language, right? So, and then it can do images and sound and coding and time series data. So it's a very general purpose technology. So really, we're kind of there in terms of capability and foundations. They do, you know, hallucinate or make the odd mistake. You know, it's just, these are statistical tools. So they're just using statistics, just in quotation marks, you know, running on massive data centers with massive amounts of data, i.e. all of data and publicly available data on the internet. So these are humongous efforts, right? And only, you know, the 10 largest companies in the world can kind of train these foundation models. So basically we have the foundation models, we have OpenAI ChatGPT, we have Google Gemini, just released, you know, a month or two ago. You know, but we have Anthropic, Cohere, AdephAlfi, and others. And so we have these massive foundation models, which are essentially AGI, right? They're basically, and so it's up to us to figure out how to use them, right? Google and Microsoft have just thrown them over the fence. OpenAI did. They said, there you go, you know, figure out what to do with it, right? So that's kind of where we are today. So it's a super exciting phase. But like you say, it's also a little bit scary because there's probably a ton of regulation coming down the pipe because these are very powerful tools.
You talk about education as well.
Yeah.
I've heard a lot of people say, oh, well, you know, one of the problems about us not doing large-scale implementations is that we're not investing in our staff. We're not investing in our people, and that could lead to worrying stagnation. But do you think that there's also an element of educating leadership? Do you think most of the C-suite within technology are fully understanding of what they need to know? Because I suppose coming from a science background, you've got a slightly more detailed understanding, perhaps, with your physics background than, say, someone who's come up the route of being an engineer.
That's exactly right. Yeah, even software engineers, they're technical people, but they haven't really, they're not coming from the same angle I'm coming from. It's a really good point where, you know, I'm just used to, you know, where's your data? Where's your data set? What have you got? And I'll work with
it. It's a different discipline, right? Isn't it? It's a slightly different methodology to approaching.
It is. It's a different approach. Yeah. So this is why it's a little bit of a paradigm shift, right? It's we're not using rule-based stuff anymore, whether that's software engineering or decision-making. We're actually, you know, using statistical machine learning, which is basically you throw as much data as you possibly can, high-quality data, your specific proprietary data, and these models will be able to predict, you know, kind of the next word or what you should do next, right? And it's kind of scary and it's kind of sci-fi, but we're here, right? We're 2024. We've arrived, really. We've got this alien intelligence just dropped on us about a year ago, but it's had a curve, right? It's been on a curve, and I've been riding that curve. But it was still a huge shock, actually, and surprise when OpenAI did that and how good it was. And it even shocked them. They thought it was going to be 100,000 users, right? And, you know, low-key, they even sent out a private memo, low-key release. We're doing a low-key release. That, you know, no one has to get involved. We're just doing another beta or alpha. And it just blew up, right? So people love intelligence, right? Of course we do. And so, yeah, it's taken off like nothing has ever taken off before. Yeah. So we're in a new place and it's an exciting place, but it's also a kind of scary place. The right amount of regulation is going to help it move forward at the right speed too. We can't just leave it completely open.
So look, one of the questions at the minute is always around trends, is always around where we're going in the market. As an AI first consultancy, you're very well placed to know what people are coming to you and talking about, what their challenges are. Where do you think we are at the moment? What are the biggest challenges from a customer point of view right now, and what are they trying to solve?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because we've got, you know, early adopters like, you know, the hyperscalers, Google, Meta, Microsoft. So they've already embedded AI in their organizations, and so they're good to go, right? And then we've got the companies that are really tech-first companies like the big banks, right? They have to be with their trading algorithms, portfolio optimization, risk management tools. They're just stacked with PhDs in physics and math and all the rest of it, right? And so those guys can kind of cross-train quite quickly because they're at that level where they can just kind of cross-train. Oh, okay, machine learning. We've got to learn that now, right? And that's kind of what I did too. But then you've got everyone else, the other 90%. Who really don't have the skills on board, and that includes management. So it really is an education process. And this is where the big four consulting companies, IBM, McKinsey, you know, the big four, Accenture, Deloitte, EY, this is where they're really cleaning up at the moment because they're just quickly training 10,000 of their workforce as quickly as possible within a year. So they're a little bit ahead, and then they just go in and train everybody else. And that's what we do as a boutique AI first consulting company.
Look, one question I'd probably like to ask you before we wrap up is, what questions do you have? Because people are coming to you and they're asking, you know, given your background, given the experience you've had as a professor, as a teaching fellow, leading academic institutions, having that physics background, having been in the industry for quite some time.
Yeah.
But when you're in that situation where you get to ask questions of your peers, what do you think it is that kind of, what are the things that are turning over in your mind that you'd like answers to?
That's a great question. So I'm always interested in the bleeding edge, right? Like, what's next? When are we going to get to AGI, general intelligence? We're not there yet. We're picking off, narrow intelligence quite quickly at the moment. These models can do art, they can do math, science, coding, prediction, time series. So they're doing a lot of stuff that we thought was uniquely human-like, especially creative stuff, just generative AI. So what I ask my peers is, what's next? You know, what's the latest development? How far away are we? You know, and these are good researchers inside of Google DeepMind and OpenAI, right? So I read their papers and it's like, okay. another one checked off the list, right? And then, the rest goes into business behind, the research. So
it's interesting that AGI piece, because I heard last year it said that AI at the minute is about as intelligent as your cat.
Yeah.
And on one hand, I was like, all right, so it's not very intelligent. But actually, my cat's not stupid. And that still displays a fair amount of awareness and curiosity.
Really good. And dogs as well. Yeah. So we're probably above mice or rat intelligence, right? So we're up to cats quite quickly, right? So I don't think it'll be that long before we have, like, ape intelligence, and then not so long, but to human intelligence general. And then after that, on the exponential curve, you can see kind of super intelligence. And then that's where they talk about the singularity, right? We don't really know what's on the other side of that curve. Yeah.
Out of interest, do you think that's the case? Do you think it will get easier to accelerate rather than, it's an exponentially more difficult step to go from cat to ape to person?
No, because there's a great paper called Scale is All You Need. And that's what we've seen, empirical. This is more of an empirical science than a theoretical science. No one knows how the brain really works, theoretical neuroscientist. So no one knows really how these deep learning models are working. But it seems to, empirically, with scale, more properties emerge, and they call that phenomenon of emergence. So we're seeing all these properties emerge. So GPT-3 was 175 billion parameters, GPT-4 is 2 trillion. And so you think about, GPT-5, maybe 10 trillion, and Gemini Ultra 2, and then we get to 100 trillion. And then you go, that's as many synapses as the human brain, right? So I think that scale is all you need, although that's quite a controversial statement. But I'm gonna, you got to put a stake in the ground, otherwise you just wish you
absolutely
wasn't. Yeah.
I mean, look, I mean, the practical stuff right now around what enterprises are challenged with, fascinating. On the other end of the scale, that's equally fascinating in terms of the sense of wonder is still there.
Exactly. It's science fiction. It captures the imagination, right? But it's also a little scary. Is it, is it going to be Terminator or is it going to be Utopia? We don't know.
Well, anyway, we'll stay away from the sensationalized for the moment. It's been fascinating to talk to you. Thank you so much for your time today. And once again, if someone is interested in connecting, finding out a little bit more about the work with Deep Learning Partnership, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, just go to our website, deeplp.com. Everything's there.
Perfect. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, David.
So, Akish, do you remember that we've had a company called Fairphone on the show?
Sustainable handsets.
Sustainable handsets, exactly. Yeah. Right? Yeah. They're back, except not with a mobile phone. They have launched their first pair of earbuds that are affordable, nice, that let you change batteries at home in minutes. So Bluetooth earbuds, commonplace accessory. Obviously, we all know that. Mm. Popularity of AirPods are huge. But they are very unsustainable. Mm. So they're hard to fix and they end up as waste. Similar story with Fairphone, really, with regards to kind of their approach to the smartphone market. So the Fairbuds cost £129, but they're designed from scratch to be as eco-friendly as possible using fair trade recycled materials and replaceable parts that can be switched with a standard small screwdriver. So look, like any other mid-range earbuds, a case that flips open, button for pairing, magnetic slots for charging earbuds. These are good earbuds, right? But you can pull them apart, you can fix them, and hopefully they are going to last longer than your alternatives. Are you Googling what they look like out of interest?
I'm literally on them. Yeah. I'm on them.
I could tell. I was looking at your face and I was like, distracted. He's blatantly going to go have a look at what the fair.
Yeah, no,
like.
I'm looking at them. Do you know what the funny thing is? My AirPods actually broke last night.
Oh, really?
Yeah, from my commute.
But surely you'd go for another pair of AirPods, right?
Well, yeah, this is it, right? But I was looking at the prices of them. I mean, my last one I got gifted for my birthday, so I didn't actually pay for them. But I was looking at the price of them last night. It was like, 270 quid.
Really?
A lot of money. That is a lot of money, isn't it, really? Like, yeah. You know, 270 quid, and you're just thinking, like, you know, what do I do? But yeah. It's just one of those things. It's just a bit, you know, like, wow, what's happening?
I mean, I think the Fairbuds look pretty good, to be fair.
Mm-hmm.
They don't look any different to most AirBuds.
No, they look good. And also, I like the fact that it says multiple devices and stuff, right? So, because with my AirBuds, I mean, you know, we obviously have work laptops, which are not Apple laptops or whatever. Sometimes I've tried to connect my AirPods and they, you know, they miss or, you know, things like that. But I suspect, you know, things like these are probably a bit easier. But yeah, no, 129. I mean, it's a price that you can pay and not really be too affected with it and, you know, have something good and, good and sustainable as well. So you're doing your bit for the environment.
Sustainable. I actually think that the design looks pretty cool. They're just very sleek, black, minimalistic.
And noise cancelling. Oh, I didn't know that. Fantastic.
Here we go.
Fairphone, if you want to send me some on this podcast at Tech Talks, you know, and we can do user reviews, then yeah, I'd appreciate that.
Well, as listeners will know, we've had Fairphone on the show. We know the Fairphone team quite well. I don't know whether they're going to necessarily send you a pair, Keish, but we've said it. Yeah. It's out there. I mean, this is as live a reaction as we can possibly have. at the minute, at the time of recording, I'm swanning about in Rio, so I'll have packed some headphones to get me through the flight.
Through those topless runs on the beach.
I'm not doing any topless runs. No. Shall I tell you what? I'm not doing any.
You were humbled last time, weren't you? You were humbled.
You get there, right? I think I'm in pretty good nick for my age. But yeah. I am a very pasty man. I'm northern.
Yeah.
But you get there and you see these 6'5" bronzed Brazilian Adonises, and you kind of go, yeah, maybe not.
Yeah, you humbled last time, weren't you? I remember you telling me, but
everyone there is beautiful. It's insane. I don't know what they do. But mate, you walk out the hotel, and Web Summit Rio is going to be an amazing event. But you walk out the hotel at like 6:30 in the morning to go for a run along the beach, and there are people surfing, they're playing beach volleyball, they're playing football, they're running. Oh. It's just so like, we live in an amazing place. We're all really happy, and you go, fuck.
We're all really happy. We're all really good looking. We're all in good nick, and we get a sun load of time. Yeah, sweet. Love working in London. Beautiful.
Anyway, London is wonderful. The sun is shining. Spring is here. So we shouldn't complain too much. But yeah, Rio is pretty good. We will be back on Friday. My guest is Binny Gill from Cognitos. But until then, thanks for your time, Akish.
Cheers. Have a good one.
Tech Talks is hosted and edited by David Savage. It is produced by Nash Squared. And we have special thanks to Lemzy for supplying music to this show.